Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has uncommon intelligence and who has brought it to bear on, well, I guess most importantly at the moment, the home front in this war for the free world, is our first guest. He is Rick Green. He is no stranger to these microphones. We've been pleased to have him a number of times recently. He's a former Texas state representative and also a documentary filmmaker. He is currently a constitution coach with the Patriot Academy and a speaker with a terrific organization, Wall Builders. You can follow him at Rick Green, GreenTX. Rick Green, it's good to have you back. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio once again.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
Well, I wanted to catch up with you on sort of the state of play with respect to the impending second impeachment trial of Donald Trump in the United States Senate. There are a number of pieces of this that, from a constitutional perspective, I know are very troubling, but I caught your Epoch Times article of the 28th of January and wanted to start this conversation, which would be all too brief, but just with a little bit of an insight into the miscarriage of justice that seems to be at work here. You've compared it to Stalin's show trials. Tell us about that.
You know, this is, and it just gets worse. I mean, it's a kangaroo court that gets more kangaroo-ish, and honestly, it's more befitting of a banana republic than a constitutional republic. But there's a reason our founders put the rules in writing. There's a reason we're a constitutional republic, so that we know what the rules are and we'll follow them and not have a show trial like this. You know, Stalin did this in the late 30s to consolidate power, to silence opposition. Made a big show of it, and unfortunately, a lot of Americans supported him in that. Entertainment folks, about 150 of them, signed a letter talking about how they thought it to be, legitimate due process and justice and all this. Reporters were very embarrassed later to have to admit just how wrong they had been.
One of them received the Pulitzer Prize, as I recalled, for the lies that he was doing on Stalin's behalf, Walter Duranty.
Durante, that's exactly right. It's just, you know, it's fake justice. It's used to silence the opposition. This is not only to get to that coveted phrase in the Constitution, coveted by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, to disqualify him from future office. It's not only for that, it's to prevent others from speaking out. It's combined with the both the rhetoric and even the efforts by some of the members of Congress to get rid of Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, anyone that even asked a question, simply raised their hand and said, you know, I'd like some clarification here. Even that is not allowed. So it's reminiscent, definitely, of the show trials of Stalin.
Yeah, it's a Marxist campaign of suppression of the opposition. I think that's fair to say. And Rick, we've talked with you in the past about the crux of this matter, which is the, well, I call it electoral grand larceny that clearly took place in connection with the 2020 presidential election, and which has prompted Donald Trump to rally his supporters and encourage them to peacefully and patriotically march to the Capitol to express their views. And all of this has been portrayed, of course, as the big lie and incitement to mob violence and on and on, and then to this impeachment on those grounds. What is your current reading, Rick, of the ground truth about the actual cumulative impact of seeming electoral fraud, misconduct, and simple errors?
You know, from a practical perspective, it's no different than if you're, you know, if your kid gets away with doing something that's wrong and you just say, oh, that's okay, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to get more of it. They're going to do it again. And for those who think that, you know, conservatives or the Trump campaign or anyone else that questioned the results in some of these states, questioned the actions, public actions of governors who absolutely broke the Constitution, broke the law in changing election law at the last minute without the legislature involved. The other side acted like, you know, this was some new dangerous thing to question those things when they had done exactly that for the last 4 years with regard to the last presidential election. Yeah, for or longer. I mean, the hypocrisy, and even they, you know, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, all supported or participated, John Kerry, in objecting to electors. So the hypocrisy, of course, I know you've talked about it, and people may get tired of hearing it, but we have to keep pointing it out, because what the other side is so good at is they are relentless in the dogma, relentless in the propaganda. And it really does become, you know, whether it was Goebbels or whoever that actually said, you know, tell the lie loud enough, long enough, it becomes truth. Unfortunately, that's a fact of life. And with social media, that happens a lot faster today than it used to, because people see the repetition of those things.
Well, and they don't see the truth about things, that's all being suppressed, which makes the whole impact and this projection, deflection, whatever you want to call it, by the left, that, you know, people like us talking about election irregularities and worse are perpetrating the big lie, when in course it is they who are doing that. There's nothing to see here, folks, is doubly scandalous, I think. Let me ask you, Rick, in closing, there are reports that Donald Trump parted ways with some of his lawyers over the weekend because they did not want to be part of this impeachment defense. The evidence of electoral misconduct and fraud and larceny and so on. Is that correct as far as you can tell? And either way, is it absolutely vital that Donald Trump make that defense as far as you're concerned?
That would be my opinion. I mean, there's some really smart folks like Jonathan Turley out there saying, hey, just leave an empty chair. Don't even show up for this because it is a show trial and it is unconstitutional. I thought, what an opportunity. I mean, if they're going to go forward with it, then he has the opportunity to respond and say, here's why I said the things I said. Certainly the things I said did not in any way incite or cause any of the violence or the things that happened that day. But here's why I said what I said. And then there's an opportunity to present the evidence why it was justified and it still is justified today. So, you know, I think it's a shame if the legal team resigned because they didn't want to present that. I think it makes sense, and I hope that the team he's hired will allow him to do that. You know, he's got to make strategy decisions there. He may even be deciding, you know, look, now that I know there's 45 votes against this, thank you, Rand Paul, for standing up and asking the constitutional question last week, and 44 Republican senators siding with him to say this is crazy. You can't impeach a former president. You can't remove someone from office that's no longer in office. This was answered in 1799 when William Blunt was impeached. So it's not a new concept, and the founders were the ones involved in that. In fact, Blunt himself was a signer of the Constitution. But his defense attorney that stood on the floor of the Senate to defend him was also a signer, Jared Ingersoll. And so he was respected by the others as being a part of that process. And he said, you can't do this. You can't impeach someone that's no longer in office. And so I think that will be the outcome, but the show trial is going to go on, and I hope that Trump's team does present all of that evidence and get it on, you know, in the public eye, like you're saying. And most people have not heard these things. They don't know.
And they might not otherwise, is the real point, Rick Green. They might not have an opportunity. We'll see what happens in Arizona, where some of these votes are being recounted in Maricopa County. We'll see perhaps if that inspires review elsewhere in the states that were contested. But this opportunity must be seized, it seems to me, carpe diem, as they say, and I hope the president and his team are listening to this conversation with you. And we're delighted that so many others in our audience have been able to. Thank you, Rick Green, for your time today and for the work you're doing with the Patriot Academy, and your previous service in the Texas State Legislature is also appreciated. Keep it up, my friend. We'll talk with you again soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and I'm pleased to say joined for the first time, I believe, by James Bowers. He is the communications director for the American Security Institute, which has a campaign started last year that I think has tremendous importance, namely the China Owns Us campaign. And you can find out more about it at China www.jamiebowersowns.com. Jamie Bowers, it's good to have you with us, and congratulations on this important initiative. There's a lot to talk about in regards to what's afoot here, but I'm very mindful, and I know you've been focusing intensively on this, the work of one of our colleagues at the Committee on the Present Danger China, Rosemary Gibson, who has really called attention, particularly in the context of the COVID or CCP virus, to the fact that we're so critically dependent on China for medicine, to say nothing of protective equipment and so on that was needed to deal with this disease. Talk about that both in its own right and as kind of a prism through which to look at this whole problem of, well, China owns us.
Well, thanks for having me, Frank. Yeah, this is the medicine issue is a very concerning problem. 97% of our antibiotics that we get are controlled by China. And so, you know, the idea that you are giving away and ceding control of one of the most important medicines in your arsenal against anything is extremely concerning. 30% of our personal protective equipment comes from China as well. So that's the face masks, it's face shields, etc. And so when we have that much control given over to China, you can even if there wasn't anything nefarious with it, even if they had all good intentions, you think about your supply line and how much what could happen there, and we would be left really without our most important weapons against illness and disease.
This is, needless to say, extraordinarily frightening, but so is another dependency, which I talk about in my commentary today, Jamie, and that is that it turns out as a result of an executive order that Joe Biden signed early on in his presidency that suspended an effort Donald Trump was making with an earlier executive order to make sure we weren't reliant upon foreign equipment in another critical part of our public health and, well, for that matter, public safety, national security condition, namely our electric grid. It turns out, according to one of our colleagues, Michael Mabey, there are some 300 Chinese transformers in the grid today. What could possibly go wrong?
That's true. And I think a lot of your listeners may not realize how much control China has, both from a manufacturing standpoint and an intellectual property standpoint, or electronics, hacking, et cetera. 300 transformers, you know, if, again, even if it was not, there was nothing to fear from a nefarious standpoint, the idea that you are ceding control of some of your basic infrastructure and to another country that is not always friendly is really concerning. And you think about what kind of, if you think about everything in our lives that we plug in, and if that could go away at the turn of a switch, we would be in real trouble.
Yeah, like life and death trouble, to be put a fine point on it, right? No, by some estimates, you know, if the grid goes down and stays down, Jamie, as you may know, 90% of us are not going to make it. And that is, you know, a nation-ending problem. And to think that we've allowed the Chinese, with all of our experience with their backdoors and Trojan horses and cyber warfare techniques of other kinds, to have this kind of penetration of something upon which we rely in that degree, it's just unbelievable, I have to say. There was also a piece that I wanted to ask you about, Jamie. I guess neither of us saw it, but it's making the rounds. Last night, 60 Minutes apparently had a deep dive report upon another piece of this problem of China's owning us, namely the degree to which they have managed, by hook and by crook, to obtain personal health data on something like 80% of us. and what the implications might be of that kind of data having migrated, being owned, if you will, by China for, you know, perhaps, you know, simple manipulation of us in one form or another, or worse, some kind of, you know, health directed attack on our population. COVID comes to mind in that regard, needless to say, but something that could be even more tailored for the purpose.
Absolutely. And it's scary even to think about why they would want that. You know, what in fact would motivate you to try to steal that data, other than trying to, as you said, manipulate or even use it from an attack standpoint? That data is obviously exceedingly personal, and it goes to who we are from at a very core. I was noticing on the news this weekend about the WHO finally getting into the Wuhan market and doing some investigations. This is a solid year after this outbreak, and to think that only now the Chinese government is allowing anyone from the outside to come in and look is ridiculous. It is really concerning. I mean, what are you going to find a year later?
Yeah, Jamie, I mean, again, part of this may sound like it's science fiction, but unfortunately, with the growing body of evidence that this Wuhan Institute of Virology was the source of this pandemic, this, I call it CCP virus, and that it is part of a biological weapons program in which diseases are being, they call it gain of function is the technical term for it, but manipulated to make them, you know, perhaps not only more communicable, but more deadly. If that's combined with genetic research, there is reason to believe, and I think actually Mike Pompeo or other government officials have talked about this in the previous administration, to believe that the Chinese Communist Party could well be designing weapons of a biological character specifically designed to attack, you know, individuals with certain genetic characteristics or populations, for that matter, with them. And again, the thing that's just so mind-boggling about this is we've had the Chinese defense minister, going back to, I think it was 2002 or 2003, reportedly talking about how China has in mind depopulating the United States so that it can be colonized by the excess population of China. Now, again, this sounds, unbelievable. And yet, the more we learn about what China is doing, and the more we learn about, thanks to efforts like yours, what they own in the way of our information or our markets or our, you know, vital supply chains, the more realistic some of these scenarios appear to be.
Yes. I mean, it does sound like science fiction. And I think it's easy for people to dismiss some of this because, you know, for the most part, the relationship has been good for the two countries in terms of trade and inexpensive goods and things like that. But you don't need much of an imagination to see that when they have as much control as they do, what could happen if they decide that we are no longer a friend and that we are much more of competition, and it is exceedingly scary.
Let me just say, it seems to me that it may have been good for both countries, some parts of both countries perhaps, and certainly one country more so than the other, as they've hollowed out our economic base and so on. So let me ask you, Jamie Bowers, when you are bringing this kind of information to the attention of all of us through your China Owns Us .com campaign, what do you recommend we do in response now?
Well, I think, you know, some of this has to happen on the corporate side. I mean, the 97% of antibiotics coming from China is largely the result of pharmaceutical companies looking for cheap manufacturing And the bottom line, we need to let those companies know from the public standpoint, from the consumer standpoint, that that is not acceptable. We also need to let our representatives in Congress understand that there need to be some rules in place that keeps some of those basic services back in the United States, that we have to require those things to be manufactured here. The biggest thing right now, though, is that we're trying to put pressure on the Biden administration to let them know that we want to continue, that the public wants to continue a more aggressive stance towards the communist Chinese government. And I think without some sort of, without the Biden administration having an understanding that people are watching them, I think it's going to be very easy for them to back off and basically undo any of the things that the previous administration has done.
Jamie Bounce, we have to leave it at that. There's a lot more to talk about. We'll look forward to visiting with you on all of these issues soon. I would just conclude by saying one of the things that I think is absolutely essential for all the reasons you've mentioned and more is for the Biden administration not only to recognize as genocide what the Chinese Communist Party has been doing to its ethnic minorities in Western China, but also to designate it as a transnational criminal organization, which it certainly is. And that would make a big contribution, I think, to the kinds of corrections that you're talking about, which are certainly needed. Thank you for the work you're doing, sir, and I hope people will check it out at ChinaOwnsUs.us and that you'll come back to us again soon.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a delight to say, as always, that we have the great Gordon Chang in the house virtually. He is a regular featured contributor to our programs, and you can find him in lots of other important places, including usually Fox News and the Gatestone Institute and Newsweek, including a piece we'll be talking about that he did recently that I suspect helped inspire the 60 Minutes analysis that we were talking about earlier with Jamie Bowers. He is a senior fellow of the Gatestone Institute. He is the author of numerous terrific books, including The Coming Collapse of China. And he, as I say, is a profoundly highly regarded essayist in a number of publications. Also a man to be followed at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. Gordon, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Frank.
So much to talk about. Gordon, I understand that you actually have seen the segment that 60 Minutes did on the purloining of our DNA and other health data by the Chinese Communist Party's BGI Corporation. Jamie Bowers and I talked about it in the abstract, but give us your assessment of it and you know, something, as I say, that you probably contributed to it through your essay about the subject in Newsweek a couple of weeks back.
Yeah. This was important for CBS to do this because it signaled that this was now becoming a part of the American conversation. And it was good for 60 Minutes to mention China because China is trying to steal our DNA. Sometimes it doesn't even have to steal it, Frank. It just buys it, as, for instance, BGI bought Complete Genomics in 2013. They've got all these research partnerships with the United States. And important, CBS mentioned that there were 23 Chinese or Chinese-linked companies that are accredited to do DNA sequencing for Americans. And that means that Beijing is getting much of our DNA legally. This is our country, Frank. We can stop this. We absolutely have to stop it.
Gordon, this reminds me of something that Maria Bartiromo reported on this morning in her Mornings with Maria program on Fox Business, where you were often featured. It was about a SWAT team that has apparently been stood up in the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to go back and do forensic investigations of previous transactions involving China, in which they may well have done damage to our national security interests through their acquisitions. And I would assume that Complete Genomics may be one of those case studies, don't you think?
Oh, well, certainly. The problem, though, with undoing Complete Genomics is that China's almost surely stolen all the data. But nonetheless, we should undo that transaction because it's still an important element of BGI's business. And indeed, we should be signaling to Beijing that they may not buy any U.S. tech company. I think it's an important advance for this SWAT team in CFIUS. We need to go back and undo every tech acquisition.
And Gordon, you know, this sounds draconian, but one of the things that you warned of early on, as I recall at a press conference we did in Washington, when that huge IPO for Alibaba was in the works, we were anticipating that it was going to generate immense amounts of money, and it did. At the time, the largest IPO in the history of the stock exchange. But it freed up cash, which it turns out the Chinese Communist Party wound up using to scarf up a whole bunch of these seed corn technology companies in the United States, did it not?
Well, certainly, because money is fungible. And we should remember that every company in China, whether it's private, state-backed, or whatever, is military-linked because of Xi Jinping's policy of civil-military fusion. That means the military gets everything that it wants. So even though you think you're only having relations with a civilian company, you're sharing tech with them, that tech can end up in the hands of the Chinese military, which is configuring itself to kill Americans. And indeed, Chinese general officers speak with relish, with glee in public about killing us in great numbers.
Which brings us back to that DNA stuff, because as you've pointed out yourself, there are opportunities, and we discussed this a little with Jamie, but there are opportunities to bioengineer weapons in the biological warfare portfolio that could be used to target very discreetly individuals, perhaps, or populations as well. No?
Well, China is hoovering up the DNA of Americans, as we just talked about. At the same time, Beijing prohibits the transfer of genetic information about Chinese out of China, and that indicates a sinister motive. And we don't have to speculate, because the 2017 edition of the Science of Military Strategy, which is published by China's National Defense University, an authoritative publication, actually talks about a new form of biological warfare of, quote, specific ethnic genetic attacks. Bill Gertz, who you know, has talked about U.S. officials speaking anonymously that China is in fact doing this. And of course, China is a member of the Biological Weapons Convention, which prohibits this type of research. But unfortunately, there's no inspection regime in that agreement, and that means China is making great strides on this.
Or worse yet, there is evidence that Tony Fauci, the famous a virologist of whom we have heard so much of late in connection with the CCP virus, actually financed some of the gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which may well be directly implicated in not only the so-called COVID-19 virus, but perhaps some of this other threatening activity. It's shocking in the extreme. And Gordon, this brings me to another kind of virus that the Chinese have been doing much to promote in our country, and I'm afraid with devastating effects, if not physically, certainly psychologically and societally. And that's this meme that we are a racist country and have engaged in systemic racism, yes, but also xenophobia. And you pointed out in a piece for Gatestone that Joe Biden seems to have actually endorsed this outrageous charge.
Yes, the president did in his January 26 executive order. He talked about the xenophobia and the racism of the federal government in prior administrations, obviously referring to the immediately prior one. This mimics China's most vicious attack against the United States. And this, of course, brings up Biden's comments from January 31st of last year and February 1st. January 31 is the date that President Trump imposed the travel ban on China. Within hours, or within minutes, actually, Biden said that this was xenophobic. The Biden campaign said that Biden's comments were not in response to the president's travel ban, but on February 1st, which is hours after the travel ban, Biden repeated the xenophobia charge against President Trump. So clearly believing that the travel ban was xenophobic. This travel ban saved lives. It would have saved even more if it were stricter, imposed sooner, and more rigorously enforced. But it shows that Biden has a mindset which is inappropriate for defending ourselves from China's attacks.
We're going to get into this mindset and the fact that it's unfortunately not simply his, but it appears the array of his subordinates who will be involved in this particular portfolio vis-a-vis China or foreign policy and intelligence more generally, it's profoundly troubling and speaks to the dangers of having a president who is deeply compromised by China, to say nothing of possible compromises of some of his subordinates as well. Let me ask you about Hong Kong, Gordon. We're hearing reports that as part of the intensifying crackdown in Hong Kong by Xi Jinping and company, that people who have British overseas passports that the British government extended to many in the territory are being pressed to choose instead whether they're going to hold a British passport or a Chinese one. What's going on in this regard, as best you can tell? Are we seeing this as a new form of, coercion of the people?
I think that certainly Beijing is forcing people in Hong Kong not to have foreign connections. They no longer recognize the BNO passport. Britain has extended that and expanded BNO eligibility to help the people of Hong Kong. And Beijing is enraged by this. China is trying to further tighten the screws on the territory. And this is going to be a continuing struggle. It is great that Britain has done something. And the United States needs to as well. And in this regard, I think that we should criticize Ted Cruz for putting a block on asylum for people from Hong Kong. People from Hong Kong need help. Their society is under attack. The United States hasn't done enough on Hong Kong. We could do a lot more, and we need to help the people there. Because the people in Hong Kong, they believe in freedom, and they want to help our society. We should let them.
One of our colleagues who was with me earlier today on Securing America, our television program, Gordon Chang, Elmer Yun, has talked about the people of Hong Kong as becoming the new Jews, people who will be forced to migrate and be without a homeland in the not-too-distant future in sizable numbers. A staggering prospect, one we will be following closely with your good help, my friend, as well as his. Thank you for your time today, Gordon, as well as joining us each week. It's one of the high points of our programming. We love to have you with us. We'll talk with you again next week. We'll talk next with Sam Faddis about this supervillain team that is now staffing Joe Biden on China. That and more. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back and joined, as we have the privilege of being with some regularity, by Charles Sam Faddis, one of the most extraordinary men I know, a former CIA undercover operative for some 20 years in a lot of dangerous places, a former Army officer, a former assistant attorney general in the state of Washington, a former congressional candidate, and the author of both best-selling fiction and nonfiction books, including his important work, Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the Central Intelligence Agency. Sam Faddis, it's good to have you with us as always. Welcome back. Among your many accomplishments is you have launched and are now the driving force behind a terrific online resource, Sam, called andmagazine.com. And we are always happy to have a chance to talk with you about some of your pieces. One of which is particularly important, I think, and very timely, is one you headlined, Great News for Beijing. And you talk about the cast of characters that have now been assembled under, to be clear, a man who's been deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, namely Joe Biden, that obviously is, well, a happy time for the Chinese Communist Party. No? Tell us about it.
Right. Well, there's some, I mean, I'm starting to refer to this group of characters as the Legion of Supervillains. When I'm working with it at home, and it's almost unbelievable. Every time you turn around, somebody new is brought out that's just you can't fathom would be selected. Specifically, in the article you were referencing, we were talking about this lady, Linda Thomas Greenfield, who's the supposed to be the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and she's attracted some heat because she gave a speech at a historically black school in Savannah, Georgia, a number of years ago. To a Confucius Institute, which, is essentially an organ of the Chinese government to spread Chinese propaganda on U.S. soil and in other countries.
Specifically on U.S. campuses, where it can be particularly insidious, right?
Absolutely. They go into U.S. campuses, U.S. colleges and universities. They claim to just be teaching Chinese language and culture, but they are absolutely, transparently a propaganda arm of the Chinese Communist Party. It's unbelievable. There's been finally some pushback on these. Anyway, the fact that she talked to them at all was deeply troubling. And then when I actually dug up the speech that she gave, it just boggled my mind. I mean, even given for this administration, I mean, if a Chinese Communist Party official had been delivering that speech, it could not have been more laudatory toward the Chinese communists. It was talking about their role in Africa and how they're the big brother to the Africans and the African continent.
No sense of irony in the use of that term, I take it. Big brother of Orwell fame being a rather insidious character.
Right. Anybody who actually knows anything about the Chinese in Africa knows, I'm laughing because it's so absurd. It's not funny. They are raping the entire continent. They are stripping it of resources. They are unbelievably abusive. There is no big brother relationship here. This is a smash and grab job. And the fact that she was trumpeting the praises of this, of the Chinese communists, is just mind-boggling. When I read the speech, I thought, oh my God, this is so much worse than what I thought it would find.
And the trouble is that that does not seem to be an anomaly, but rather a quality that is, well, if not a job credential in the Biden administration, certainly one that has a lot of company, shall we say. And when you look at Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, you look at Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, you look at Averill Haynes, the Director of National Intelligence, just to pick several. I'd say nothing of Susan Rice, the domestic policy advisor, John Kerry, the climate change czar. These are people who have historically done business with China, literally in some cases, and in other cases in an official capacity, on terms that I think now, particularly against the backdrop of what Donald Trump tried to do to stop business as usual with China, seems very much of a piece with the demands, the dictates, the desires, at least, of Xi Jinping, no?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, obviously, for many, many years, when we're talking about any foreign nation, we're used to the fact that there may be differences of opinion in U.S. policy circles on how to proceed, harder line, softer line, et cetera. That, in my estimation, is not what you are looking at now. Now you are looking at people who are, to put it as directly as I can, not on our side. This cast of characters is not working for the benefit of the United States, and we just kind of disagree with them about some policy issues. They are working for Beijing. We have a Secretary of State. Going to have a Secretary of State who, frankly, is not our Secretary of State. I mean, he works for the Chinese Communist Party, and I think that is true. And as you noted, and I've said many times, fits very well. I mean,
could include the president himself being bought and paid for by these people. This is a terrifying prospect. This is a, you know, what you look at and you think, oh my God, this is the takeover of the entire United States foreign policy and national security apparatus by the Chinese Communist Party. That's what you're looking at.
I do have to say, as I mentioned earlier in the show with Jamie Bowers, to his credit, though it remains to be seen to what effect, the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, did say in his confirmation hearings that he supported the designation of the Chinese Communist Party as engaged in genocide in Western China against the Uyghur Muslims and other ethnic minorities there, that was pronounced by Mike Pompeo on his way out the door. It, again, remains to be seen whether that will be the final disposition of the administration, but I was a little surprised to hear it from him and Treasury Secretary now, Janet Yellen, as well. But I'm hopeful that that will be a formal determination by this administration in due course. Let me turn, Sam, quickly with you, if I can, to an interview that Bill Evanina gave to Fox News in the twilight moments of the Trump presidency. He had been appointed to be the director of the National Counterintelligence and Security Center under Obama, interestingly enough. He was kept on for the entirety of the Trump administration in that role. And he really unburdened himself in this Fox News interview of a very powerful warning to the American people about the magnitude of the threat we're facing from, yes, the influence operations, as you mentioned, the Confucius Institutes is one example, the espionage on an unprecedented scale, you know a thing or two about that, and the subversion that's taking place inside our country, notably the use by the Chinese Communist Party of racism as a weapon to divide and dismember us, ultimately. I don't know that you saw this interview. I don't think it surprises you that that kind of information is in hand, but it does seem as though this is such a powerful counter-narrative to Joe Biden's famous, "Come on, man, they're not bad folks," which seems to be kind of the leitmotif of this this supervillain team, as you say. How important is it that we get this calibrated properly, Sam, and that the policies and the personnel be aligned accordingly?
Well, it would be very hard to think of anything that's more important, right? This is not a threat from some insignificant third-tier nation. This is a threat from a nation which is challenging us for supremacy, if I can use that word, on the face of the earth, and perilously close to achieving it. And we haven't begun to make the American people aware of what is really happening. Every once in a while, you know, somebody will read in the paper that a Chinese spy was arrested and just think of it as sort of incidental and have no great consequence. And the fact that we have this massive program that has just completely co-opted such a huge swath of American leadership, corporations, institutions. I don't think, I know we don't. The average American is not aware of that, and it is terrifying and hard to see that Biden is going to help us.
Sam, we are out of time for discussing this today, but we will be discussing it more with you, I know, in the days ahead, including on our television program, Securing America, which you can follow at securingamerica.tv. It's on the Real America's Voice Network every day now from 3 to 4. And we're delighted to have Sam as one of our featured guests. We'll talk with you there, and we'll talk with you again soon here, Sam, and we'll talk with the rest of you again, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.